So, thank you very much, Friedrich Aichiner. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we have enough time for our Q&A session until 12 o'clock. Look. Okay. I think we start with Arndt Ellinghorst. I don't know. And then the other, Michael Raab, Horst Schneider. Okay, Arndt Ellinghorst, please.
Okay, thanks a lot. It's Arndt Ellinghorst, Credit Suisse. Dr. Reithofer, I think we talked many times about BMW's practices in selling cars, especially with leasing, for many years now. And the one major criticism from the financial market has been that there's always been, you know, sort of a sense that you've been selling above natural demand by using very cheap leasing rates and also financing rates. Now, it appears that a car company like BMW, not just BMW, but many others as well, are still just charging, not the real cost of capital, really, by using financial services. So isn't it really the case that you have to increase leasing rates, financing rates, to really reflect the level of your cost of capital in future? And if you do that, to get to a better pricing level, how much could that hurt your volumes in the long run? In other terms, aren't your products just probably 30% too expensive? Your customers can't really afford it, so you offer cheap leasing financing, and in real terms, your products would have to be probably 30% cheaper in the longer run. And secondly, a more technical question, your 4.7 billion receivables to the other group companies. I mean, firstly, what are the other group companies? What are the 4.7 billion for? And when is this cash coming back, and where should it come from? Thank you.
Okay, I think we start with Mr. Aichiner.
Well, you asked about the leasing business. Now let me take the example of the U.S. market. Over years, we really achieved a very profitable leasing business there, though it's the U.S. market contributed with 40% to the profit of the financial services business there. And we achieved to really stabilize solid and high residual values. So I think from this perspective, the business model was okay. Now, what happened in the last year? The problem is that the used car market has fallen down significantly, as well as the new car market. And now, as you know, we have not the possibility to stop maturities coming out of contracts, as we are able to stop production if the demand on the new car side is going down. So those maturities came out, and the market was not prepared, the market was not there, demand was low, and then the prices went down. That is the situation we went into especially in the last quarter of 2008. Now, asking for the interest rates, the charges, we are charging interest rates, and we are working on arm's length principles, and we increased in the meantime our leasing rates in the U.S. as well, and we started rebalancing the amount of lease cars against our loan portfolio in the U.S. And so the outcome will be that in 2011, the maturities will be significantly lower, with a middle two-digit number against the high volumes we see in 2008 possibly in 2009. So we did some rebalancing, and I think we increased lease rates. That was one of the countermeasures we've taken in 2008 in order to come to the right approach for the leasing business. So there's for me one point. Now, the question about the holding companies and the financing there. Though, you know, we have in the other companies, we have the treasury, the holding companies that do a big part of the financing business for us, and that is where the receivables are. On the other hand, as I mentioned to you, only 3.5 billion of those receivables are directly in the financial services business. We are now on a way to think about certain restructuring, as I mentioned, how we in the future can shape a kind, maybe, of a finance holding in order to come to a better organizational approach to the whole funding business. And one of the targets of this attempt is to get a better consolidation and a better, I would say, risk management in place.
If I may just ask another question there. So if you're saying within the other companies there are group financing companies as well, I mean, aren't the 4.7 billion then really sort of money to a financial services subsidiary that you put into the other segment but is really financial services of nature?
Oh, well, you are aware that the major part of the refinancing funding is for financial services business. That's very clear. So the other companies are still working to achieve good financing for the financial services business as well. That's true. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. And then on the leasing, just one more thing on the leasing side. It's not just the U.S. in my view. It's also, if you look at Europe or Germany, we talk about 70-80% of your business to corporate customers, which is basically a legal thing in Germany. And my observation is just that this business has turned more and more towards somehow getting the new cars into the market with the leasing financing deal and private customers then buying the car after a year or two with a 30-40% discount. Isn't that really the practice where we are right now?
I think we have a bit to differentiate. So if you look into the lower segments of our business, if we look at the mini business, if we look at one series business, right, there's a different picture that we see there. You have much more cash buyers there. But if you go up, look at 7 series business, 5 series business, usually you have business people buying those cars and they try to finance. So that is part of their model. And put it the other way around, if BMW would not be able to offer attractive leasing or financing, we're absolutely clear the customer would move to another brand. So that is the competition we are in. So it's not for me an opportunity to step out of leasing business or step out of financing. It's the question how we balance the business and how we manage the risk in that business and the cost. That is what we try to tackle now with what I said to you, with the restructuring effort we are now on our way to undertake.
I think, and another point is important, our market performance, and Norbert Reithofer give you some information.
I mean, I would like to tell you again what happened in the year 2008. I mean, if I see the worldwide luxury car market, we had in principle two halves last year. The first half of 2008, -2% from a volume point of view, luxury car market decline. And in November, December, only to give you the two numbers, -25% and -26%. I mean, from September onwards, something happened in the market. I mean, and we all know what happened in September in the United States of America. So, and that was something. I'm more than 20 years in the car industry. In 20 years, I have not seen such a thing happen, that we lose 25% volume in the luxury car market. That is one thing, in my opinion. So, and then if you see the markets in 2008, then you can see it started in the United States of America. By the way, it started already last year in January. I mean, I was in the United States in September 2007, and we were together with our dealers, and our dealers said, be happy with cars you can sell still in the year 2007, because 2008 will be not such a nice year for the car industry. And we thought, can it be the case? It was the case. That means in the United States it started. What is the biggest car market of BMW? It was the United States of America. That means we were affected first because of our pure volume in the United States. Then what is our second biggest car market? Germany. And our third biggest car market, the United Kingdom. So that means our three big car markets were affected, one market after the other. We have to see that. So, and if I see the volume losses and the volume gains in the United States of America, we told you during the quarterly conference calls that we took out cars out of the United States of America, 45,000 units in total in the year 2008. As you know, we started early to do so, and we were able to gain on the volume side, for example, in a market like China or in a market like Russia. The real challenge for the car industry at the moment that the volume reductions are a worldwide challenge. So in the year 2008, we were happy that in the first half of the year, Europe was still as a car market intact It was okay. So, but in the meantime, we all know that Europe is not okay anymore. So, and that is the real challenge what we face at the moment. Only, and we all face that challenge. And Mr. Ellinghorst, if it comes to volume, you know my opinion. For me, volume is not everything for a premium car manufacturer. We have to balance cost of retail, we have to balance mix, and we have to balance volume.
Okay, next question comes from Michael Raab and then Horst Schneider. Yes.
Hello, gentlemen. Michael Raab from Kepler. I've got two questions. First of all, you're claiming that you've made good progress in the fourth quarter in destocking and reducing inventories. Apparently, this should have helped your automotive free cash flow in a positive way. On the other hand, it's noticeable that your dealer financing increased over proportionately. Is it fair to assume that you moved inventories from your own stock to dealers? And the second thing, talking about dealers, walking around, seeing a couple of dealers, talking to them, it's quite interesting to find that apparently you've started to do now in the cash market what you were only more or less renowned for in the financial services segment, that is offering very aggressive discounts. My question is, coming back on residual values, if you discount a 5 Series in the cash market with like 17 to 20% initially, aren't you creating your residual value problem of tomorrow because you're diluting your brand image and your pricing perception in the eyes of the customer? Thank you.
Okay, Fritz Eichinger, please.
Now, if you look at our numbers and you find out that we've not increased our stock because we produced exactly the level of cars we've sold in 2008. So there is a balance in the production. We're not in a position that we really increased heavily production over the retails we had in 2008. So we secured the level that we achieved at the end of 2007. So that is, I think, very different to some competitors who pushed heavily over the retails in 2008. So having said this, it means that dealer inventory is nearly on the same level. Now, of course, the demand is going down. On the dealer side as well. In January and February, we see demand slipping down, and we have to adjust the production accordingly. And this is, I think, a process that's going on, and we are still trying to keep the balance between sales and production, and that is the part-time work we've now introduced in order to achieve this.
Maybe following up on that one, I had one dealer in Frankfurt telling me that he was supplied about 500 pre-produced vehicles, which is quite unusual because actually you would think you guys are building to order. So apparently in doing so, you're re-increasing capacity utilization. But my question is, what is the cost of opportunity of doing so? I mean, apparently you will have to discount those vehicles if you want to sell them off nowadays.
Norbert? I mean, you should do the following exercise. I mean, to move away now from one single dealer, you should do the following exercise. You should compare car companies, and you should compare retail and registrations. And then look into the different car companies and have a look at the retail figures and the registrations of the cars. And you will see between the car companies, for example, in January and February 2009, differences. And retail means an end customer, a real customer. Registrations can't end on the football field, as we all know, and then can go into a market as a young used car. So look into the figures and compare registrations and retail. It's very interesting. At least it was for me very interesting. And if it comes to dealer, our figures for 2008 show us that we were able to reduce our own stock compared to end of 2007, and that we were able to reduce the dealer stock as well. So, and please have in mind, we were able to cut production compared to 2007 by 100,000 units. And it was, and let me really use that word, the toughest cut in the premium car industry, what BMW has done. Otherwise, the inventory management, free cash flow, working capital would not have been possible. So in my opinion, I don't want to say we have done a good job, but that was in actual terms a good job on the inventory side.
Just to supply with some numbers, so in quarter four, our retail was at 321,900 cars. The production was down to 285,636 cars. So the difference is a reduction of 36,268 cars. This demonstrates what I said. We reduced production in order to avoid heavy stocks. That was the target. And on the other hand, you really have to consider that on a single dealer level, that could be a bit different. Also, it's a question how his sales performance was in December, how it was in January, and we are very really close looking at this because we want to keep our dealers in place. And for us, it's absolutely clear if they are overstocked, they are running a financial risk. And as we are financing them, this is in our interest to make sure that this is not happening. So this is something we are really following up.
Okay, next question, Horst Schneider, and then Adam Jonas.
Good morning, Horst Schneider from HSBC. I would like to come back, first of all, to the cooperation with BMW and Daimler. Could you give us maybe here more details on that, what you have got precisely in mind? So that means how quick can you reap any benefits? Will that be visible already in 2009? Can you give any indication what amount you are going for? I only remember to the words of your competitor here, Mr. Winterkorn, last week. He said, just combining purchasing, the potential benefits are really limited here. You need to work together on projects like aggregates, engines. Then you can reap larger benefits. So maybe you can give also some insight where the benefits are precisely coming from. And then secondly, I have got an additional question on the free cash flow. If I understood you yesterday right in the press conference, you're going for a positive free cash flow in 2009. And in that context, I would be interested if you or which amount of cash out you expect from the charges you have taken in 2008, and if you can expect any one-off cash outs also here in 2009. Regarding inventories, do you believe you can reduce your inventories further? And do you believe you can cut your production to a larger extent, or production will fall more than you expect sales to decline? And last question then is on the mix and the earnings outlook. Do you expect the mix to deteriorate further in 2009? Will that be an ongoing trend in the face of the sales decline? And when can we expect again a mix improvement, also in 2010? Or is it rather a structural thing, what we are seeing here in the premium market?
Okay, thank you very much, Horst Schneider. I think we start with the presidential question.
I mean, you see me smile. I mean, it was a very good question, in my opinion. I mean, does it mean, or had Mr. Winterkorn in his mind to put more and more Volkswagen parts into the Audi brand? Is that what he means? But then you can buy a Volkswagen. You should not pay a higher price for an Audi, if that is the case. That's my comment to that one. Of course, it's a mixture sign of a premium brand and of a mass manufacturer brand.
Sure, but it's a decision of the consumer. So.
Of course. And Daimler and BMW, you could see during the last couple of weeks that we are not just talking with each other, that we decided things as well on the purchasing side. And, I mean, you know our cooperation on the hybrid side, and we will definitely develop our cooperation in the field of purchasing further. And if we have something to say, and that is really an agreement between Mr. Cetshi and myself, we will do it together. Please understand that. But we have very good ideas in our minds.
And when can we expect and release the first results? Or when can you give any indication? What is the stage of the project?
Look, from a result point of view, if you would like to go one step further, of course you have to have in mind model cycles as well. Because one thing is right, you cannot just say, I put part A, what is in a BMW, into a Daimler model as well. First, you have a so-called modular systems, and they have to fit for the different cars. So, and of course, you have to wait until certain points in time of model cycles as well. And then you have a big advantage if you do that. You cannot say now we have a current 3 series or a current C class, and now let's exchange parts. It does not work. I mean, what you have to do, you have to start with commodities, and that is what we have done. We started with commodities, and the next step is you have to look, of course, into development of cars as well. But if we have results, then we tell you together. That is our agreement, and I think it's fair enough. And I would like to say one additional word. It was not your question, but I think it's important as well. I mean, if you compare at the moment BMW with other premium car manufacturers, you can see our 5 Series BMW is in the 6th year of production. I mean, Mr. Ellinghorst, you asked the question as well. And our current 3 Series cars are in the 4th year of production. And we had, in the year 2008, a situation that we had two challengers with brand new cars in the volume segment. That means in the 3 Series segment. And what we will do, more than 50% of our volume cars, we will launch between 2010 and 2012. Then we will have the advantage.
Second part, Fritz Eichiner.
Well, I mean, cash flow management is one of our number one priorities. And we, as I said before, what we did in 2008, we tried to do the same now for the first quarter, second quarter, to balance really production and demand. That's what we're trying to do. Now, having said this, the question is, what is the volatility on the demand side? So we are proactively now reducing production in order to balance, and we think this is could work out for first quarter. But, I mean, we have to see, especially March is a very important retail month for BMW. We have always traditionally high volumes there, and we have to see what the fluctuation is, what is really the outcome, and if it works out. But having said this, our target is to balance supply and demand, and therefore in order to manage our cash flow in the right way. Said is the same with the dealers. So we try to really look at the whole stock. It doesn't matter where it is. It's on the dealer side or on the group side. Now, you've been asking for extra charges. We think that with the provisions we've taken in 2008 for the financial services business, we have done the right step forward, and it should be sufficient for this year to protect this year, the portfolio this year. The first results we see now in January and February on the financial services business is supporting this view and supporting what we've done so far. So if I look at the United States, receivable value losses are actually a bit lower than we've planned, but we don't know what the next forthcoming month are bringing now. It seems to be that we are on the right side. I think it was the second question about the charges.
Sorry, it was also about the cash out from the charges taken in 2008.
The cash out from the charges in 2000.
Yeah, so you have built up the charges, but what is now the cash out from that in 2009, or is there any cash out from that?
Well, the charges.
Because you realize the losses on the residual
I mean,
values.
We had, of course, we had a cash out in 2008 as well, but the number of, told you the extra charges, the 1.9 billion, they went into the portfolio as a provision for 09 or 10 or 11. That was a number. And the charges we had in 2008 are part of our financial services result, as well as of our result in our automotive business.
Okay. Adam Jonas, and then Christian Breitsprecher.
There we go. Hi, Adam Jonas from Morgan Stanley. Three pretty simple questions. First, for Dr. Reithofer, a production guy. I hope you can answer this one for us. If we assume that in 2009 that your production is down within the midpoint of your 10 to 20% range, down 15% just for sensitivity, what would your capacity utilization be globally for the year? That's my first question. The second one is for Mr. Aishina on the concept of arm's length. Now, you mentioned that if BMW did not provide the attractive leasing or financing deals, I believe your words were, we would likely lose the customer to a competitor. I want to tie that in to something that Dr. Dieter Zetsche said to analysts in London a couple of weeks ago when he was asked, how important is your finance sub for your car sales? And he replied, if we did not offer sales and financing activities right now, he estimated, and of course nobody knows this, but he estimated he could lose one half of the customers that currently lease or borrow money from Mercedes to buy a car. Do you agree with that Zetsche rule in principle as far as BMW is concerned? If you do, then I do struggle with the concept that you said that you really are borrowing and lending at arm's length. And then the third question is on new equity, okay? Many of the people in this room, myself included, many people on this call, work for institutions that have required new equity in recent times. This is a world where equity is very precious. Your dividend cut was, I think most people would believe, is a very wise way to kind of start to preserve equity. It was a good move. Your stock price has been a very good performer. I think, to your credit, bringing to the forefront the issues that are facing the industry in a very transparent way, your stock has been the best performing stock of the comparable universe, with the exception of Volkswagen, which I think we argue is not a stock. Why don't we take... you currently do not have a provision to issue new equity, I believe. What is your opinion on this? Why can't you strike preemptively while you still have a strong financial position and issue equity when you don't have to, as many successful companies have done in this environment? Or do you not foresee any circumstance where that is required at all?
Norbert Reithofer?
I mean, sometimes it's an advantage to be a production guy. For example, in the year 2008, or I think as well in the year 2009, I mean, it has to do with inventories, of course. What we use, Adam, we use different models. And if it comes to plant utilization, let me use the example Leipzig. I mean, we used in Leipzig, as you know, a lot of temporary workers. And we said in the current situation, we would like to reduce the temporary workers, if it is possible, in Germany to zero. Or let me say to a very low number, 500 or something like that. And we had in Germany more than 8,000. You should know at the beginning of 2008. So, and we said, okay, we would like to reduce in Leipzig as well. And we said we will not run the plant in 5 days. In a two-shift operation, we will run the plant in 6 days with an extended shift, and we will use our own people only, and we will reduce our temporary workers nearly to zero. We have a couple of 50, I think, or 60. So that was the plan behind Leipzig. I mean, as you know, we will launch a new product in our plant in Leipzig, the X1. The X1 will be a volume product, and the launch will be in the second half of 2009. So, and to use the plant in the current situation, like I said it, and reduce the temporary stuff nearly to zero was, in my opinion, a very intelligent step. So if I see plants from a capacity utilization point of view, we used, for example, Regensburg in an ABC shift operation. So, and if you reduce in such a difficult time a plant to an AB shift operation, of course, then you have to reduce people. And as you all know, we decided at the end of 2007 to reduce people. And of course, we reduced people in our production plants as well. So, and what we will do now in the current difficult situation, we will move from ABC shift models to AB shift models. And afterwards, if we are in a better situation again from a market condition point of view, we can move the plants up again. But if we do so, we will use in future again temporary workers to do so. So and it gave us a lot of flexibility.
But I mean, I appreciate you can't answer that this question saying like 69.5% utilization. But if you had to boil it down in terms of a rough number of fixed capacity, not the labor issue. I know you have flexibility there to make fixed costs variable, but of your installed capacity, roughly what would that number be? Are we talking 65, 70%?
I cannot answer the
question. Is there an answer to that question?
We don't ask the question in such a way. We don't ask us that in such a way. Look, if you can produce 1.5 million cars and you will produce, let me say, 1.35 million cars, then you underutilize your capacity of 150,000 units. Is that a fair answer?
If your capacity is indeed 1.5.
More or less 1.5.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Dr. Eichinger will answer the second part of your question.
Well, coming back to what Mr. Zeschi said, so I have to say basically we agree with a few in principle, because I think if you look at markets like the US, the UK, and Germany, if you could not offer attractive financing, we would lose volume, definitely, because the cash buyers would not be there to replace those customers. And it's a part of our competition as well. In other parts of the world, especially in Asia, it doesn't play such a significant role. So we have, in those areas, very low penetration rates, and therefore it's not a big issue. It's really more or less focused on those three markets, but they are the biggest markets. So that is one thing. Then your question about the equity. I mean, if you look at the equity we have in the group, you know, we have more than 20 billion. The ratio for the automotive segment is 42.3%. And we think that we have sufficient equity. And with the financing capabilities we have and the flexibility we have, we didn't see a need now to come up with a request for new equity. And especially if, from my viewpoint, the share price is not on the right level for this.
Okay, Christian Breitsprecher and then Sabine Blümel.
Christian Breitsprecher of Oppenheim. I would like to come back to the issue of net interest-bearing assets in the automotive division. Well, first of all, is there any chance to derive that number from the asset from the segment balance sheet? Second point: when I look at your walk down year-over-year change in terms of net interest-bearing assets, you say that there are basically an increase in internal net financial receivables from 6.8 to 8.1 billion euro. But when we look at the segment cash flow statement, you actually show a cash inflow from internal financing of 2.7 billion euro. And I just would like to understand how these numbers fit together. Also, in that respect, when we look at the cash flow statement for the segment, you know, 2.7 billion euro internal financing inflow, and 2.8 billion cash inflow from change in other financial liabilities. I do not see how these cash inflows from increasing liabilities pair up with the segment numbers in the balance sheet in terms of financial liabilities.
Mr. Eichinger.
Okay, so now, it's a balance sheet number, and it's consistent. It consists of liquidity in the master parts. I mean, if you say you cannot get a consistent view, and your question is going in direction to the new segmentation we've set up, I would ask you that we have an intense talk to one of our experts that can demonstrate a little bit more in detail, because here it's a bit difficult for me to do it.
Okay, then.
Do it afterwards. What Mr. Eichinger had in his mind.
Is that a promise?
Pardon? It's a promise.
Thank you.
think it would take a little bit too much time. The experts are prepared, and after the session, we give the information.
It's a promise and a clear offer from our side. Yeah. Okay, Sabine Blümel and then Adam Hell. Yes.
Sabine Blümel from Creative Global Investments. I'd like to come back on Daimler and BMW, because if I understand it correctly, Daimler has been much more proactive and eager to work closer together with yourselves rather than you with Daimler. We understand that you can't retrofit existing models, and you shouldn't, but surely in the long lead times, you could now some sort of start working together for the next Mini replacement. Why not? Because, I mean, last year you even contemplated using a Fiat platform or an Alfa platform for the Mini. Surely to cooperate with another premium manufacturer is a little bit more desirable. The other thing I don't understand is you are one of the few win-win situations, Daimler and BMW. Brands are clearly distinguished, and you could, especially internationally, have a strong position together. And in your yesterday, you talked very much about 2009. What's your outlook for 2010? The consensus seemed to be there is no clear recovery. It will be rather U or L-shaped recession. How are you and the whole industry positioned for that? And the last one in inventories. If you understand you correctly, your inventory levels are in absolute numbers the same year-end 2008, year-end 2007. But surely in selling days, you should be the same level. So that means the absolute level should be lower to adjust for the lower demand levels.
Okay, we start with Norbert Reithofer.
Yes, I mean, I would like to start with your 2010 question. I mean, if I should be honest to you, and I think we should be honest with each other, and Adam, you said we reported in a very honest way during the year 2008. Nobody of us knows what will happen in the year 2010. That is an honest answer. We can recover quicker than we think at the moment. It can take another year. At the moment, an honest answer, we don't know. If you look into the PORC figures, I mean, they decreased from a volume point of view in the year 2009, for example. They think at the moment that we will lose volume 18% compared to 2008, the luxury car market. So 2010, a lot of insecurity. If you ask institutes, come on, give me an indicator, where will we be in 2010? But from a BMW point of view, I would like to mention one important point why we are confident if it comes to 2010, 11, and 12. As I said, the market, we don't know. Will it recover and in what a rate it will recover? So, but BMW will launch the new 5 Series. BMW will launch the new 5 Series Touring. BMW will launch the new BMW 6 Series. BMW will launch the new BMW 1 Series. BMW will launch the 3 Series derivatives, and all between 2010 and 2012. And if you know the percentage of these models of our total volume, then you know that BMW will be, from a pure new model point of view, especially between 2010 and 2012, in a very good shape. So that gives us confidence. And from the year 2011 on, we have nearly these volume models launch after launch. So that is the second part of my answer. The first part, if I'm honest, we all don't know what will happen in the year 2010. But I have a personal opinion. I don't know the colleagues from the United States of America. I think the United States of America will be the first country who will take off. So that is my personal opinion, but it's only my personal opinion. And it's our strongest market. It would not be a disadvantage for the BMW group. So Daimler and BMW, I mean, as I said, we started already projects on the purchasing side if it comes to commodities. I can only say, if you would like to do more things, You have to wait for the launch of new products, and it takes times. Even if you would like to use a gearbox together in a car, you have different body invites. The gearboxes doesn't fit in. So you have really to wait until the launch of new products. Otherwise, it will not work. So by the way, the same is true. And with the one or the other of you, I discussed the issue. The same is true for BMW. If we would like to make big steps forward, if it comes to cost reductions on the material cost side, it will happen with the new 1 Series, it will happen with the new 3 Series, it will happen with the new 5 Series, because the cars are designed to have lower material costs. So, and that is what we have to have in mind. I mean, we are an industry with 7-year cycles, and you cannot just say now, the 3 Series sedan is 3.5 years old, I start now to redesign the car. So it is not possible. It was a very straight answer. So, and as I said, we have an agreement. The two gentlemen, Zetsche and Reithofer, we said if we have to announce something, then we will do it together.
Yes.
Now, the question about the inventory in selling days. I just want to, first of all, explain a bit how we manage this process of production planning and sales and allocation in sales. So we have a monthly cycle, and based on sales forecast, we adjust production on a monthly basis. And for all the markets, we have inventory targets in selling days. So not in absolute numbers. And now if the volume is going down, it's absolutely all right what you said, then the total stock has to go down as well. We try to adjust within the production accordingly to the sales forecast. That's a process we run over years, on a monthly basis. And we need to use the flexibility in production and short-time working in order to really do so.
Next question, Adam Hall. Thank you very much. And then Jochen Gerke.
Hi, it's Adam Hall from Execution Limited. Three questions, and it really goes back to the walk down you showed on the automotive segment EBIT earnings breakdown. It's firstly just on the pricing. Where is the price impact within that breakdown? And just in broad terms, you've talked about the arm's length with regard to the pricing of financial services to automotives. With the borrowing costs we're seeing being much higher, I presume in 2009 the effective pricing impact there will be clearly negative. So maybe you can expand a little bit on that. And secondly, when I look at that breakdown, the walk down, you show volume mix 1446 million negative. Now, BMW brand sales, I think, down 6% last year. It looks like it's 2 to 3 times this year. So if we're talking about 3 to 4.5 billion negative, is there anything particular that I might be missing within that? And then finally, on the cash flows, your automotive cash flows for 2008 were down 81 million. But that, of course, includes your working capital inflow, which was an impressive achievement. But it means that excluding working capital, your cash flow was minus 1.3 billion in 2008. And given the headwinds we've got, if we put working capital aside for a moment, it strikes from the outside as if it could be something of the order of 3 billion, something of that kind of number, possibly more as an outflow overall in the underlying terms. I don't know if you can just help us sort of reconcile some of these broad numbers. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Adam, the answers will come from Mr. Aichiner.
As I said, we work on the arm's length principle when it comes down to financial services. You have to see that it's not only the prices we have to pay on the bond sides, the spreads that are relevant for cost of capital. We have other instruments that we are using, commercial paper programs that are much more favorable when it comes down to cost of capital, as well as deposits. So it depends on a mix that we are using. And I can tell you we already adjusted our charges in direction to financial services based on the principle I mentioned. So that is how we operate this business. Now, Your second question about the losses we had with the mix. We have to consider first that we had extremely high support, sales support as well in the last quarter, and we are not calculating that we have to move forward the support in this level in a year 2000, in a whole year of 2009. As you have seen, we own a way to adjust our cost base, and we are really rigorous moving costs down. And there's another compensation that we want to bring in to the equation. And the third thing is that we are expecting better mix coming from the ramp up now of our new 7 series, and it has a much better contribution and will give us additional positive effect in major markets like China, Russia, and so on and so forth, where we really have a good position with this car. So those are the elements. But at the end of the day, it's absolutely clear. The question is, how far will the market drop and when will it recover? And there's still a lot of uncertainty in there.
Okay, Jochen Gerke, and then Albrecht Denninghoff. Yes.
Yes, I have two areas of questions. First of all, for Mr. Aichiner, I want to come back to this net liquidity for the automotive business, if I can, for a second. Just very two broad, simple questions. You're showing 9 billion of net cash, and yet, even if I strip out the impact of pensions on your net financial interest for the automotive segment, you've paid broadly 200 million net negative interest. How is that possible? And secondly, on the same subject, walking from 2008 to 2007, you've increased net liquidity by 1.7 billion euros. You paid dividend, you generated no cash, and you funded your pensions. What am I missing? And isn't it fair to say that comparability now with this new reporting from BMW to other companies is absolutely of little value to us, who try to make a comparison between Daimler, Volkswagen, BMW, and other car makers of the world with this number that is almost impossible to reconcile? And the second area, Mr. Reithofer, more strategically, I think most in this room and on the call will agree that you have managed so far the business very well operationally and very evolutionary. Don't you think that in 2009 the shock could be so high that evolutionary is not enough anymore and you might have to do more drastic steps, i.e. cut capacity in a more dramatic way, step away from some expansion plans and stuff like that? Is this something that you would decide on in 2009, no matter how bad markets are, or is this something where you are saying this is such a shock that would have to wait for a bit of a longer period of time to look out and make a more drastic decision on that side? Thank you.
Okay, we start with Norbert Reithofer.
I mean, for a company like BMW to cut more than 10,000 jobs, including temporary workers, was already a real shock, trust me. And we had big debates in the company, especially, if you can imagine, at the end of 2007 to do so. So, of course, we will carry on. First of all, we will not replace jobs if people leave us. Then we will not hire additional people. That means we can say already at the moment we will reduce further 1,500 positions in the BMW group. As I said, 4,000 people signed last year contracts. On top, we had about 1,600, 1,700 people. They left the company on their own. That means both together was 5,700, 5,800. If you add on top the 6,000, that was a number of close to 12,000, excluding the former Citroën company. If you add it on top, even more. So that was for the BMW a big step because it never, ever happened in such a way. So if you ask me the view into the future, I mean, if you would like to grow as a company, and you can now say we disagree with you, Mr. Reithofer, but in my opinion, if a company is not able to grow anymore, then the company will soon be dead. That is my crystal clear opinion. Everything else is, in my opinion, naive. So that means, of course, our target is to grow. And I mean, we will launch volume products starting already this year, the X1, for example, We will launch the 5 Series GT this year. We will launch, as you know, a new mini convertible this year. And as I said, we will launch volume car per volume car between 2010 and 2012. And of course, even if we say, and I said it yesterday during the annual press conference, I don't think that we can achieve a volume of 1.8 million cars in 2012. We will be 100,000 units lower. But if we are 100,000 units lower, then you need, Adam, a capacity of 1.7 million cars to grow to that volume figure. So that means you see me here in a very confident position. I'm absolutely sure that we will grow to a level of more than 1.6 million cars in the year 2012. So 1.8, I said yesterday, is not realistic anymore because you cannot go down that way and then think you can go up like that. Then you will again destroy your residual values. I agree with all of you who have that in mind. So it will be a parallel line to our original plan, but of course we will grow. And even if we enter into a cooperation with other car manufacturers, by the way, I see more than one possible partner for a cooperation for BMW, then, of course, you have to grow. That means two very important pillars are, on the one side, efficiency, and you saw on the cost side, minus 801 million last year. And I remember very well when we were together the first time in the year 2006, I think, Adam, it was even you asked me the question, and can you carry on to gain efficiency? And I said, yes. And it didn't take more than 1 second to say yes. So we showed you that we are able to gain. And I mean, 800 million is a lot for a medium-sized car company like BMW. So are we able to drastic steps? Yes, we are able to drastic steps. We cut the salaries of our board by 40%. We cut the salaries of our Bereichsleiter, the senior vice presidents, by one-third, and down the ladder to our normal staff by 10%. So, and you have to see both together with our job cuts, that was not evolution anymore.
So, the second part comes from Mr. Yeah. Eichinger.
Now, your question about the interest result of automotive business. Now, basically, the negative effects overcompensated the positive ones, and you have to think about, for example, the reversal of discounted pension obligations and other provisions that we have to bring in to this interest result. Now, it seems to be that some of you are really struggling with the new segment reporting. The comparability with our companies was not possible in the past, that what we thought, because with the rules for subgroups, it was difficult to compare. It seems to be that we need some time and more discussions on that. And as I said a quarter of an hour ago, our experts are really ready to go with you into the segmentation and answer your questions. Feel free to ask them. We prepared to do this after this session here.
Sorry, Dr. Reithofer, maybe can I just have a quick add-on on what you said? A parallel development would mean that this is basically just a one-time shock to the economy. I think many in this room at least debate whether we are not just seeing a more structural shift in global economies and the way we do business. If so, I think most of us don't fear that BMW is a 1.6 million unit company, but more 1.3, or whatever the number is. Your leasing business has been such a driver of growth that I think that most of us debate that 2007 is the real basis for comparison. Your residual values have dropped much more than anybody else's in the world. Isn't this changing the brand perception and the way you can distribute cars in the future much more than just a one-time hit and then growth parallel to prior plans? Thank you.
Look, I can only say what I personally believe. So in my opinion, we will start to grow again because, of course, we were looking into the crisis situations as well. I mean, 1973, 1992, 1993, after the IT bubble in the year 2001, 2002, 2003, we analyzed the situation and we are confident that we will go back to a growth path in total in the car industry. But I would like to go back and, I mean, you are the analyst. You normally analyze a company and you ask yourself what is the profit loss situation and so on. But I give you now an answer unusual for your group. In my opinion, we have a social responsibility as well as companies, especially in these days. So, and the DAX 30 companies were asked by the federal government in Germany, please can you keep your staff in 2009? Please can you use more short-time work during the course of 2009? And we said yes, because if all companies worldwide say we just cut jobs, then it can be the case that from a country point of view, we can be challenged with totally different questions. And I don't know if we would like altogether these questions. That was an unusual answer.
Okay, next question, Albrecht Denninghoff and then Frank Biller.
It's Albrecht Denninghoff from BHF. First question regards just the housekeeping. Why did you pay a dividend at all if cash is so valuable at this time and if refinancing costs are so high and aren't transaction costs higher than the 30 cents you pay per share? Second question is, in your walk down on the profit, this big volume number of 1,446 million from volume and mix, is it fair to assume that also pricing is included there? And could you give us a spread out in between? Is it fair to assume that it's one-third volume, one-third price, one-third mix, or is mix and price significantly more than one-third of the part here? It's still a high number if one assumes, because it's a full year number, and the market really was good, as you said, in the first half. And so if I say that's somewhat an error of magnitude of 2.5% or 3% of sales. Is it, well, just the double number on the fourth quarter deterioration? And is the double or three times that proportion of sales a number what reflects the market conditions of the first quarter we're likely to experience now? So just to have a better feeling for the headwinds coming up to you. And could you give indications of the order of magnitude of the positive ones you indicated? In your speech, you said yesterday that you're going to cut CapEx for property, plant, and investments, that you are going to cut the reduce the R&D expenses. Is there really a big potential to reduce these cash outflows already in this year and then the next year, given that you're entering a new, a stronger model renewal phase in the next years where normally outlays go higher? Thank you.
Okay. Fritz Eichinger.
Well, you asked about a dividend. I think we really have a stakeholder approach that we are following in the company, and we think this is valid for our shareholders as well. And so the decision was made to really pay a dividend for this very difficult year. Continuity is a driver of our dividend policy, and that is a sign we want to give. Now, if you walk through the profit and the extraordinary burdens we had to take in 2008, I would say, as I mentioned already, the biggest part was the risk provisions in 2008. And we actually are holding the opinion that we won't see a risk provision burden in 2009 as we've seen it in 2008. Then the currency effects in 2008 have been around 400 million. We are very well hedged this year on the major currencies, and we think that there is a burden left because we are still a bit struggling with the development of the currencies in countries like in Russia in South Africa, where we are not able to do a proper hedging. So there is some headwind coming from there, but it will not be in the same order. Then raw materials, it was a burden last year in around about 200 million. We are waiting tailwinds now this year. We think with a drop of material prices, they will help us to achieve our financial targets. So it will be a tailwind this year. We have to evaluate how far this goes, but it will clearly be a mid three-digit million number. That's how I see it. Depreciation will be nearly the same. That is the expectation. And now we talk about volume, mix, and market. If you look back to our result in a fourth quarter, clearly the price effect was the major one there. As the markets have really fallen down on an unexpected level, there was too much production in place from all competitors, and everybody had to try to clean up stock. And this led to a very high sales support, and that's what you see on the pricing side. And we are not prepared to continue at those levels of sales support our business in the course of this year. So that's why we don't think that the fourth quarter is really something you can now put as a basis for your assumptions how we will develop our business in the course of this year.
Okay, Frank Biller and John Buckland. Yes.
Yes, Frank Biller from LBBW. Just coming back on your leasing business again, am I right in this assumption that your provisions are also going for the leasing fleet coming back in 2010? I miss here some sort of a thing.
Yes.
Just the calculation, if leasing residual values, car residual values, are staying as we are today, is there an additional provision coming in the course of this year for 2010 leasing fleet? And the other thing is in credit default rates here, additional provisioning in 2009. What default rates you are calculating, or what's the magnitude of your provisions, and are you calculating with a default rate of 2% roughly, or is it lower?
Now, coming back to provisions, clearly, as I said, the provisions are allocated for the whole portfolio. So so also for contracts that will mature in 2010 and 2011. So now to give you a clue, it's different from market to market. Just to give you an example of the biggest market, leasing market, U.S., we calculated the provisions for 2009 based on the results on the losses we had to consider at the end of 2008, so the November and December numbers, and they were extraordinarily high. So this is the basis for the provision calculation for this year. Now, for 2010, we are calculating a certain improvement on the residual values, but it's still extraordinarily high. And if you look at the long-term average, I would say it's three times higher than the long-term average. And now if you look at 2011, there we see two effects that we had to take into consideration. First is we lowered our leasing contractual lease prices in the contractual residual values in the leasing contracts we had in 2008, so we now have a lower basis, and this is another step forward in order to manage the risk there. Second, with the shift from leasing to financing, the maturities, the volume in 2011, we go down significantly, and it will be a mid two-digit number. So both effects should help us to stabilize the business, and nobody knows how this crisis will move forward, but with everything we can judge now, we think it should be sufficient, it should be the right order of magnitude.
So I think we have time for two more questions, John and then Philip.
Thank you. You seem very confident about your profitability targets 2012, and there's some debate about what the volume will be when you come to that year. But you also said you're very confident that raw material costs will be significantly more than you had previously planned. Can you say with some certainty that you will meet these 2012 profitability targets, irrespective of what the volume is going to be? I mean, obviously, you can't be completely independent, but can you categorise how, you know, what is the minimum volume? Can you run at current production levels with the new models, with the raw material costs, and meet those targets? I mean, is that something that's in your back pocket there? And the other, going back to this, the provisions, and you've made, have you in the fourth quarter? Did you make a change in policy? In other words, more conservative compared to what you did to 2008? Because the words that you're using now about we can't rule out more provisions is basically what you said at the beginning of 2008. And every quarter you made another provision, and you got the biggest one was at the end of the year. So have you made a real change to say we've looked at everything, we've looked forward sufficiently such that we are in a position to say unless there's an absolute catastrophe, there won't be more of this drip on the residual value or the loan loss as well? And then on the final quick question on production, we are in the middle of March. You must know what your production is going to be for the first quarter of this year. How does the production volume look compared to the fourth quarter? Can you actually give us a number for production volume for the first quarter or close to? Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Norbert Reithofer.
I mean, first let me start in the year 2008 again, only to explain to you why we are confident for the year 2012. I mean, if you see additional, costs for residual values, for our personal reductions, what we needed, residual values, credit losses, 2 billion, as we all know in the meantime, headcount reduction, 0.5 million. Then if you add on top 0.6 million for higher raw material prices and currency effects in the year 2008, then you are far over 3 billion. And if you are still able as a company to make an EBIT of more than 900 million, then you were able to make progress on the cost side, definitely. So are we well on track on the cost side? Yes, in my opinion, we are very well on track on the cost side. And that gives us confidence that we have the whole cost side under control. And let me say, we launch, as I mentioned, the new 1 series, the new 3 series products starting in the year 2011. 5 series will come in the year 2010. And we will have launch after launch, and you can trust us, we turned around every screw. We calculated component for component. We calculated sub-assembly for sub-assembly. Different compared to the past, totally different. With, let me say, a total cost focus. So that means these products will move us further if it comes to the cost structures of our company. So that is my first answer, why we are confident. And that, as I said, we have 100% under our control. We cannot have excuses. That is what we can influence 100%. So let me now come again to the year 2012 from a volume point of view. I mean, I said we cannot achieve 1.8 million cars anymore. And I said, yes, it can be 100,000 units less. I don't know yet the real figures because we don't know what will happen until the year 2012. And I would be a very rich man if I would know what will happen in the year 2012 now, because then I would buy the right shares. So that means we don't know yet what will be the volume. But I'm very confident that we can achieve between 1.6 and 1.7 million cars. So, but I don't know, to be honest. So will we focus on our profit targets? Yes, because from a cost structure point of view, we should be able to achieve it even if we have only a volume of 1.6 million cars. Because what we have to do in our company, we have to lower our break-even in any case. And Mr. Eichinger said the current situation is a very good fitness training for our company. I mean, if you have volume drops of 25%, you can have no better fitness program.
Okay, Fritz Eichinger.
Well, your question about the provisions, are they sufficient? Do we have to expect another hit, yes or no? I mean, basically, I have to say we cannot rule out now that there will be no further risk on the horizon, and nobody can, because this would mean I know exactly how this crisis will come to an end and how it would proceed into the future, though I don't know it. But what I can say is that we really had covered all foreseeable risks from today's perspective. So that's what we really tried to do. If, for example, a crisis is taking longer or it's going even deeper as levels we see today, I mean, this could then give a different picture. But from today's perspective, I said we've done everything to cover foreseeable risks, and that is now in the books. If you look at the actual development and what it says today, I mean, I explained what we see in the U.S. The U.S. development on residual value losses is supporting our view today. That's what I can say. So with January and February, I mean, it's online or even better than we've planned. So that is positive. But we don't know how the crisis will proceed. And if you look at the credit risks, now if there is another bank going down and things are getting worse and dealers have more trouble than we anticipated, then I mean, you have further risk. That's all I can say at that point in time.
But can you not say whether you looked more critically in the fourth quarter than you did in the previous quarters? Because in 2008, each quarter they said, oh, we've looked at it, this is the view we have today, but the view was wrong. And you can have two ways. You can look at it what the market is now and say, I make decisions on what the market is now, or you can say we make a much more conservative assumption about the future, and let's say it continues to go down at the rate it's been going down, and we project that forward and we make the provisions on that basis, which is a completely different philosophy. And then therefore you have a sort of cushion for the future.
Yes.
I mean, I don't get the impression you've got a cushion for the future.
Yes, John, we understand. Yes.
Well, I mean, I explained that, of course, we took our learnings out of the development on a residual value losses side over the course of autumn last year. That was very clear. And it goes into our backtesting. It goes into our risk management. That is all taken into consideration. And I already explained, for example, that we brought the contractual residual values down now. By a significant step is another sign that you are more conservative in this business. And a second thing is that, as I explained already, that we shifted from the leasing business to the financing business, and that is still something that we are now following up this year. So we try to come to a better balance in 09 or 10 with the new contracts for leasing and loan in order to take some risk out of the business. And the third thing is that we try to improve our processes and especially our used car channels. So for example, in US, US dealers were not prepared to market used cars to a certain extent. Usually those were independent used car dealers doing though. Now we are building up this channel even strongly in order to stabilize our used car values as well. So there's a lot going on now in order to really come to a structurally better business model in the area of financial services.
So we are on time. It's 12 o'clock. Last question, Philip.
Thank you. I'll try to be quick. And sorry to go back to this issue of the FinCo, but it's on everybody's mind, I think. To help us understand some of these issues, I think we've seen your financing costs go up gradually, which is fine. We see that in the market. You're trying to reprice your leasing offers, your loans, and it's not as easy as you'd like it to be, of course, because you don't lose too many customers. But my question there is, at what point do we get to a situation, if you can no longer increase the interest rate you charge to your customers and your financing costs continue to increase on a trend we've seen recently, at what point do you start operating the FinCo on negative spreads? That's my first question. The second question would be on this issue of recapitalization of FinCo, which is on everybody's mind. And I'm sure you're going to have meetings with Moody's, S&P's, et cetera, over the next few weeks, looking at your new segmentation, how different it is, et cetera. Can you give us an idea of what kind of metric the rating agency will look at to determine that you need to put more equity in the FinCo? I think I'm comfortable you can do it internally, but you know, what kind of leverage ratio, what kind of indicators do you need to satisfy the rating agencies, or will they either cut you or they will force you or require that you put more equity in the FinCo? If you can help us understand that, that'd be great.
Coming back to the last question, I mean, we are in discussion with rating agencies, and I think it's not so much the equity questions that we have to answer. I mean, they are looking at our cash flow, they are looking at our liquidity position, and of course at our earnings and ratios. As we could demonstrate so far, we have besides the reduction in the profits, we have some good news on the liquidity side that we can now offer. If it's enough, we don't know. We are in the middle of the process, on the other side, there is a negative trend in the industry, and this is something that that we have to consider as well. So we work with them, and we don't know the outcome yet at that point in time. Now, the question again about the leasing and how we and the spreads. We have to see two points. I think all the car manufacturers who compete in the market have the same situation now, right? So I have to rebalance their leasing business. I cannot see that BMW is the only one who's struggling with leasing. Everybody does. But some are not showing it. They have it in their in other cost positions. You don't see the risk provision that we've clearly made transparent. And we have to come to the right approach there. We are not prepared to really get away from our arm's length principle, but we have, of course, we have tactical spendings in our sales, where our salespeople are trying to balance their offers against those of the competition. Then you have maybe a discussion in cost of sales on the pricing side, but we are not going away from our arm's length principle when it comes down to financing of financial services.
Okay. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for the discussion. I think it was a good discussion, about more than 70 minutes. And our reporting experts, Dr. Wittig and Mr. Sengerwald, will be available during lunch and will be more than happy to walk you through the accounts and especially through the net interest-bearing assets of the auto segment. And also Mr. Eichinger and Mr. Reithofer will be present. Thank you very much. I think we meet us for lunch. Thank you.
Thank you.